welcome in and thanks for joining us on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. Eric Pfeiffer here from Hoosier Ag Today. And the podcast is presented by the Indiana Corn Growers Association and the Indiana Soybean Alliance, also our friends at Indiana Farm Bureau. And today we have a special edition of the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. I'm joined by our friends at the Indiana Corn Growers Association and Indiana Soybean Alliance, represented today by Steve Howell, the policy guy for Indiana Corn and Soy. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Eric. Good to see you again.
Glad to have you back on the show today. And we're also joined by our friends at Indiana Farm Bureau and President Randy Crone. Thanks for joining us, Randy.
Hello, Eric. Good to be here.
And you know, this is really a special show because, you know, it is election time. It's right around the corner here. And obviously the big election here in Indiana is for this race of governor. And for Indiana agriculture, this lieutenant governor race, the lieutenant governor is the Secretary of Agriculture, oversees the Department of Agriculture, and we have one of those candidates for lieutenant governor in with us today as we broadcast today from the Indiana Soybean Alliance headquarters here in Indianapolis. Terry Gooden is here, the Democrat candidate for lieutenant governor. Terry, thank you for joining us today.
Eric, it's an honor to be on the most important agricultural podcast in the state of Indiana. So it's a pleasure for me to be here. And hey, I've got Steve and Randy over here by my side, and it's going to be a good day. I'll tell you that right now.
Well, you know, they've got some important questions to ask you. And really, you know, this is important because agriculture has sometimes taken a bit of a back seat in some of these conversations as it surrounds the governor race. Thankfully, each year, you know, we did this a couple months back now, the lieutenant governor debate held at the state fair. You know, it was standing room only that day. And it is a great event that Agri Institute puts on and that our friends at Corn and Soy helped put on and Indiana Farm Bureau. But, you know, they put this nasty thing on it, this clock.
All of
these issues that you have to discuss, and they go and they put this clock on you. There's no clock. I'm not putting any signs up today saying, all right, Terry, you've only got 20 seconds here.
I seem to get that at the debate. It was like, hey, Terry, what's it mean when they stick their hand up by their throat and they kind of go back and forth? What's that mean? Is that
keep talking?
Keep talking. Okay.
Keep talking until you get the actual the
shepherd's hook.
So there's no clock today. All right, I'm not turning your microphone off.
All right,
we're going deep into the issues today.
Wonderful.
And I am gonna let Randy and Steve talk through some different questions that they have. I'll ask some follow-ups here, and I'm just looking forward to a great conversation surrounding ag policy here in Indiana and get your thoughts and get you to represent the McCormick-Gooden ticket. But first things first, I'll let you introduce yourself for those that maybe didn't get to see the debate a couple of months ago and maybe they're, you know, hearing for the first time about this governor race here in Indiana. Take an opportunity to introduce yourself for our listeners here on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast.
All right. Hey, I'm Terry Gooden. Grew up down in southern Indiana, a little town called Austin, and grew up on the family farm out there, raised beef cattle, still raise beef cattle. I'm lucky enough to be able to still work that farm, and we raise beef cattle continuously with my twin brother. His name is Jerry. Now, don't tell me about the rhyming names. It's one of those 1960s things, right? So we raise beef cattle there, and I've been blessed to have my dad is still alive, so he helps out as well whenever we ask him, right? So he says he's retired, but that's not the way it works. So, you know, it's exciting to be a farmer and then to realize how important it is, the state government and the aspects of state government and their impact on local farms. And what we've got to figure out is we've got to figure out how do we do better in Indiana. And spent 24 years in superintendency in a public school down in rural Indiana, small rural school. Spent 20 years in the Indiana General Assembly as a state legislator, and most recently spent 2.5 years with the United States Department of Agriculture as the state director of rural development. And I tell you what, Eric, I couldn't be more pleased to be on this show today because what I saw when I was driving around the state of Indiana really disturbed me over the last 2.5 years is when we go into these small towns and once you got past the McDonald's and the dollar store and you drove downtown, it was pretty desolate. It was a lot of going out of business signs. signs and a lot of for sale signs in some of these small communities, and Indiana can do better than that. And what was really disheartening is when I talked to the folks in those communities and they talked about their small schools, the crunch on these small schools from funding, from dollars going to other places, to other schools, and vouchers being the biggest culprit of that, those folks are really struggling. And, you know, you want to lose your community, you want to lose a side of what's going on in the community, that when they lose their school, it's pretty tough to be able to rebound from that. We all know that in those small communities. So Indiana can do better, Eric, and that's what the McCormick Gooden team is going to bring to the table, is we're going to do better for Indiana. And we're going to start right off the bat. We're going to start with the expansion of broadband. Now, the current administration and administrations previous to this, they've been sitting on millions and millions of dollars for broadband expansion. And it's time to get that money out the door. We don't want to talk about rural development. And I always just cringed every time the leaders of Indiana would get up and talk, we're going to work on rural development. And they didn't in that same sentence talk about the expansion of high-speed internet or broadband. Now, let me ask this. How in the world can you have rural economic development within the same sentence not say the word broadband or high-speed internet? You can't do it. And that's just one of the examples of how rural Indiana and agriculture, as you said earlier, they've been put on the back table. They've been put on the back table for 20 years. It's time to give agriculture seats at the table again. I'm going to tell you this right now. Terry Gooden gets elected as lieutenant governor, agriculture is going to get its voice back in Indiana.
Let's take some questions here from the organizations that represent farmers, Indiana Farm Bureau. First, let's start here with Indiana Corn Growers Association, Indiana Soybean Alliance. Steve Howell, you've got some questions, I'm sure, here for lieutenant governor candidate Terry Gooden.
Yeah, just playing off Terry's comments about economic development in rural areas. The ethanol industry has been a great rural economic development success story. A lot of that processing is going to happen across Indiana and rural areas. That's where we see the ethanol plants, the biodiesel, the largest biodiesel plant integrated facility in the country is here in Indiana. I guess where do you see the state expanding biofuels? Is there anything that the state of Indiana can do to incentivize further adoption of biofuels? How can we utilize more corn and soybeans for biofuels here in Indiana?
Absolutely, Steve. That's a great question. I'll say right now, yes, we can expand, and the state of Indiana must do more. Can we do more? We must do more. And let's get real about this, okay? Agriculture, and Indiana agriculture, we have fed the world. We have fueled the world, and we have provided fiber for the world for clothing. So, hey, we've fed, fueled, and produced the fiber that clothed the world, and we're going to continue to do that. And what we've got to do is we got to sit down and say, okay, we want to talk about renewable energies, right? Let's talk about renewable energies, where those make sense. Let's talk about what makes sense in this area for renewable energy and what makes sense in the other area for renewable energies. And let's also talk about Purdue University. As I laughed and joked at the debate, hey, I'm an IU grad, but we're going to pat Purdue on the back because they've got, you know, the world-class agricultural school there, and talking about new inventions. Let's see what the future holds for renewable energies as well, and let's make sure that Indiana's on the cusp of that and the front of that, so we're not falling behind. Let's be the leaders on that for once. Let's make sure we move forward with that. So we're going to do a huge incentive program to try to figure out how do we improve Indiana agriculture, and that's going to look like this. We know that the markets are tough to control, and tariffs are terrible for our nation. We know that, and I don't know why anybody would talk about wanting to include tariffs. We studied that in sixth grade history on up about how bad tariffs are, and they're sometimes necessary, but it hurts farmers. Tariffs just destroy farm trade. So we're going to talk about those issues, but we also know that markets are controlled. They're commodities, and they go up and down. But what we can help with in Indiana, which is what we don't help with, is we got to help farmers on the input side. Hey, if we can lower the cost of inputs for these folks, then we can help manage the end result there on dollars when it comes out. So there's ways that Indiana can jump in on this and help out.
I know that corn and soy, you guys, you're going to have a bill that comes through next year on biofuels. Can you discuss that bill a little bit, Steve? And then maybe, Terry, if you can talk about, you know, would you be a champion of that bill as it runs through the House and the Senate here coming through next year?
Yeah, just real briefly, it's our motivation is to add value to corn and soybeans for our farmers, but there's also a benefit to the rural communities where this processing takes place, as I mentioned before. And then also it's the incentive would push more adoption, more purchasing by Indiana consumers to have that cleaner fuel, oftentimes lower cost fuel. So that's the effort. It's a retail incentive and a blender incentive to get more adoption, more pumps out there across the state. So there's just more adoption of using higher blends of biofuels. That's where we see the kind of the quickest path to additional corn grind and a benefit to soybean farmers as well.
Because right now it's a little tough to find that, you know, E85 in some places where, you know, I can get gas a little bit cheaper that runs in cars that are, what, 2001 and newer. Yeah. That's perfectly safe for my vehicle. I have to go seek it out at this point if I want to find that.
Yeah, the real focus is to get additional E88 or unleaded 88 or an E15, a 15% blend. Our infrastructure now can support that. The cars that are on the road now can support that. So if you want to lower the carbon emissions, the quickest way to do that is higher blends of biofuels. And this bill would incentivize retailers in Indiana to offer more blend, higher blends of ethanol and biodiesel.
We have done that in the past in the legislature when I was there and always supported that. But here's what I'm going to say, Steve. I'm going to see whatever you folks bring to the table, say here's what we would like to have, and I'm going to double it. I'm going to say, okay, let's look bigger than that. Let's look at a bigger picture. And I think in Indiana in the past, what the legislature has done is they've tried to do things on the cheap. Okay, you can't do things on the cheap because if you do it on the cheap, you always have to come back and redo it, right? No, let's look at the big picture. And I know you folks, when you try to put these programs together, and I'm trying to speak for you, but when you put these programs together, you say, okay, what will the legislature actually buy into, okay? Well, listen, we want is this. We want the big, broad picture. We know that agriculture is probably the most important business opportunity and also the most important, let's call it production in the United or in Indiana. We know that, right? So why don't we start paying more attention to that? And if you're going to say we want 150 pumps in the state of Indiana, I'm going to tell you, how come we don't have 300? And then if you say, okay, we can get 300, then I'm going to say, okay, how come we don't have 400? So I'm going to continue to challenge that because I understand the importance of agriculture in Indiana. And here's what happens. If agriculture does good in Indiana, that means our small communities do good. When our small communities do good in Indiana, that means our bigger communities do good. And that means the state of Indiana does good. A rising tide lifts all ships. And when we can get the administration, and for the past 20 years there's been one party control, folks, let's not mince words here. And I'm not throwing stones at my Republican friends. I've got many of them over on the other side of the aisle, but they've been in charge now for 20 years, and Indiana's not gone in the right direction. Indiana's not fared as well as other states have in the agricultural sector, especially the agribusiness side of that. What we want to do is we want to bring all that to the forefront, and we want to say, okay, everybody's going to have a seat at the table. We're going to have Steve at the table. We're going to have Randy at the table. We're going to have farmers at the table. Okay, how can we make it better in Indiana? And that's how we're going to move forward.
Randy Crone, Indiana Farm Bureau, just released their legislative priorities here recently. I've got a hunch I know what question he might unleash here. Go ahead, Randy.
Okay. Thank you, Eric and Terry. We're going to start with the real easy subjects here, and then we'll get a little harder. And, you know, I don't go to a Farm Bureau meeting that somebody doesn't bring up property taxes. Uh-huh. That one comes up. And, you know, you look over the last 3 years, it's dramatically increased mm-hmm. on the farmland tax side of it at a time when farm income is dropping, and I think USDA projected 25% reduction. So those two don't go along very well. Margins, you know, I think right now I told our son, you know, this year the goal is let's not lose any money. Let's make sure we at least break even, hopefully make a little. But so margins are a lot different in the farm world than they were a few years ago. And with property taxes going up, I just ask, you know, what would your administration or how would you deal with that? And, you know, when you look from the farm property tax side and realize you know, that's how we fund local government. But what would your proposal, how would you help the farm community out on the tax side?
Well, first of all, Randy, I think you brought up a great point. And what I want to do is I want to level the playing field for those farmers, because as we said before, farming is the probably the largest production mechanism in the state of Indiana, right? So here's what I don't understand. We will go out and we'll recruit factories that will come in and pay people $12, $13 an hour and give them thousands and thousands of dollars of tax abatements. How come we're not treating our farmers the same way? Because that field is a factory for that farmer, just like that building that's sitting downtown employing so many folks or making the hubcaps, right? So how come farmers aren't treated equally when it comes to taxation and as we move forward? So that's going to be a huge part of it. But let's be clear here. Our opponents are not serious about the property tax issue and the property tax crisis because they created it. All right, the policies that they've implemented over the last 20 years has created the situation we're in now. There's no denying that. So what we're going to do is, as you saw where the McCormick Gooden plan, we introduced a property tax plan where it's going to cut property taxes at the local level. But guess what? If the state of Indiana is saying we're going to cut local property taxes and we're going to take away your revenue, well, then who should replace it, right? It should be the state. So we're going to replace that local revenue with state revenue, so there's no, so the local communities are held harmless when it comes to trying to figure out how do we operate. Because hey, let's listen. When we call the ambulance, we want it to show up, right? When we call the police, we want them to show up. And daggone it, everybody likes to have their garbage picked up at least once a week, right? So hey, let's get serious. You saw their plan, a knee jerk reaction. They just said they was going to increase the homestead credit or an exemption there. Well, then all of a sudden you saw all the communities coming out saying, oh my God, they're going to devastate the local economies because we're going to have to lay off city and town workers. And you know what they didn't point out is the fact that, hey, their property tax plan is not going to lower property taxes on farmers. It's actually going to raise it on those farmers because they're increasing the credit on a home, right? So you've got maybe have one home, obviously, on a 700 or 800 acre farm. Guess where the money that's going to be taking off of the home, wherever it's at, that multi-million-dollar home that's now going to be eligible, that tax burden is going to be shifted over to the farm ground. So their plan is actually going to increase taxes on farmers.
Now, you talk about that funding coming from the state. Is that going to take that surplus that we have as a state and kind of run through that pretty quickly?
So what we're going to look at is we're going to look at tax credits, where they can use that tax credit on their when they file their taxes. They'll be able, whatever will go up in a gain on the property tax side, they'll be able to get that gain back on their income tax side. So it'll be a credit that comes back to them or in taxes they won't have to pay on the income side.
Okay. Also, you know, you've mentioned, and you mentioned it during the debate as well, you called the Republicans' plan a knee-jerk reaction, all right? Now, your plan, the McCormick-Gooden property tax plan, during the debate, there wasn't one, and then right. A couple of days later, there was one. Some might call that a knee-jerk reaction.
Right. Well, the trouble is this.
Where did it come from?
Well, the reason ours took longer is because we actually did research and we went to LSA, the Legislative Services Agency that does the writing of those bills, and we actually did the research to see who was going to be harmed and who was going to be helped in certain levels of practice of property taxes and how we use those. So what we did was is when we did that, we looked at plans that had already been introduced in the legislature that had bipartisan support. So we crafted our property tax plan from legislation that had been introduced in the legislature, but it had never made it through. But it was bipartisan legislation. So we put together a package and a plan that day one, when we go in there, we'll be able to pass and get immediate property tax relief. They did not. So that's why we say theirs is a knee-jerk reaction, and ours took research. We sat down and we researched that for weeks upon weeks, and we also got professional input from those folks that were in the Legislative Services Agency that put these things together.
I just like to comment on the property taxes. It's a balloon. You push in one spot, it pops out somewhere else. You're shifting, and that's mm-hmm. what's happened the last 3 years. We've shifted to farmland. So my question would be, is property tax the correct way to fund local government? Or are there other options out there that we could be looking at? I don't think you'll get any debate from anybody. Local government, I want the fire department to show up. I want the ambulance to show up. So we have to fund it. But what's the right way to fund local government?
Well, I think you're correct, Randy. I think as we move along, what we've done is we've kept, a lot of times we've kept antiquated taxing systems in place, right? Because they were convenient, and if you try to change it, then it causes controversy, right? So I think what we need to do is we need to sit down and take a comprehensive look at that, Randy. Say, okay, maybe property taxes aren't the best way to fund our local governments. Maybe it's a different type of tax. And what we're going to take a look at as well that's going to be huge for farmers is we're going to take a look at the personal property tax and how that impacts farmers, because that's an issue that a lot of times farmers don't talk about. But at the end of the day, man, that's pretty hefty price tag. So when we get together and we sit down, what we're going to make sure we do is we're going to have local government at the table. We're going to have taxpayers at the table. We're going to have farmers at the table. And we're going to come up with a feasible solution on how do we fix this and how do we move forward in fixing it. And we don't want to just do a Band-Aid fix like what's proposing there, because guess what? If they cut the homestead credits, then in 10 or 12 years, 5 years down the road, guess what? Something else is going to come up. They're going to have to come back and redo that. Let's sit down and put a comprehensive property tax plan together. And let's move forward in Indiana, and let's everybody bite the bullet, and let's do this the right way instead of trying to figure out how do we continue to put chopsticks in to make the thing work.
I think that, you know, one thing that does get a little bit lost, and this is my opinion, that gets lost in this property tax conversation is, regardless of who gets elected governor, it is the legislature that has to act on this. So, you know, whatever plan that you and Ms. McCormick put forth, or, Senator Braun and his running mate, Mr. Beckwith, whatever you put, the legislature has to act on this. You mentioned that you've done the research and everything that goes with that. Are you saying that right now the plan that you and Ms. McCormick have put together, if you're elected, you believe you have support from people in the legislature right now that you think you could go in there and get that thing passed with little changes to what you've proposed?
I think what we have is we have the starting point, and I think what we've got to do is we've included the legislative services side with the research, and now let's bring in the folks that it's going to impact, because what we decided is as Dr. McCormick and myself, is there shouldn't be any decisions made without talking to those folks who those decisions are going to impact first. So we're going to make sure that any kind of decision that's made, we want to talk to those folks and see what kind of impact that's going to have on them.
So just following up on that a little bit, I don't want to speculate too much, but I would say odds are fairly good if you're elected governor, lieutenant governor, you're still going to have a Republican House and Senate. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody's predicting a shift there. So how do you work with the legislature with the House and the Senate under Republican control? How do you get things passed, or how do you see that working with a Democrat governor?
Yeah, so that's a very good point, and one of the reasons that Jennifer chose me as her running mate is because of my relationships with folks across the aisle. So I can sit down, we'll sit down and we can talk about it, and we can have those conversations about, hey, what does this look like at the end of the day when we get this finished and the final product on the property tax side. So we're going to make sure we create more opportunities for relationships, and we're going to rekindle the old relationships. But I think really, Randy, if you stop and think about it, if these proposals are brought forth and then there's a way to be able to project this, we get these out to Steve and Steve's members, we get them out to your members, Eric gets them on the radio as we talk about these, then people are going to see what the options are, and that's going to put a lot of pressure on those folks if it's not necessarily an option they want to support, but if it's an option that's what's best for Hoosiers, that's going to put those folks in a position where they're going to start listening to their constituents, something they don't do now. So we're going to be able to have that bully pulpit to be able to talk about that.
Let's take a quick time out here on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. We have much more to come here with Terry Gooden, Lieutenant Governor candidate on the Democrat ticket, and we'll come back with more questions here from the Indiana Corn Growers Association, Indiana Soybean Alliance, and Indiana Farm Bureau.
There is strength in numbers. That's why the Indiana Soybean Alliance membership and policy and Indiana Corn Growers Association need you. These organizations represent Indiana soybean and corn farmers on critical and regulatory issues affecting their industry. Along with support from the national organizations, National Corn Growers Association and American Soybean Association, the Indiana members help determine public policy positions on critical issues, including farm bills, trade policy, and ethanol and biodiesel legislation. Become a member of Indiana Soybean Alliance membership, Indiana Corn Growers Association, or both. Visit incornandsoy.org to select a membership. That's incornandsoy.org.
At Indiana Farm Bureau, we serve tree farmers, goat farmers, and in fact, all farmers. With over 250,000 members, Indiana Farm Bureau represents a broad range of farmers and puts power in your collective voice. You also get advice from our subject matter experts, more affordable health plan options, and support for youth programs statewide. So whether you grow soybeans or strawberries, membership means you'll be heard. Become a member today at infb.org.
We're back here on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. Eric Pfeiffer here, Steve Howell right here to my right, Randy Crone to his right, and Terry Gooden right across the way here, Democrat candidate for Lieutenant Governor here in Indiana. And we're having just a good conversation about Indiana Ag Policy here on the podcast. That's kind of why we started this thing many, many months ago now. And just excited to have this conversation ahead of the November election here. And Steve, I know that you've got some more questions here for Terry. Why don't you fire away with another one?
Sure, and I'll just kind of dovetail off of my biofuels question, but kind of broader than that and kind of related back to economic development opportunities in rural areas. We see a real opportunity to further develop the bioprocessing that we have across the state. And we see an opportunity for like industrial biotech to locate here in Indiana because we have such a robust biorefining network across the state. And just recently, Premient in Lafayette announced a project where they're going to produce some plastics that further develop the corn product that they refine. We see opportunities like that. What can the state do to incentivize? We believe we've got a great place to do business. We could always do better. How can we maintain that? Plus, what can we do to attract those companies to locate here? And we see a lot of these companies going to locate in rural areas to provide that boost that these rural communities need.
Right.
And at the same time, of course, our incentive here is to benefit corn and soybean farmers and
right.
add value to that product. But what can the state do to incentivize and attract industrial biotech to Indiana?
That's wonderful. And as we move forward, Indiana must be one of those states that is included in that. You know, so here's what we got to do. I'm gonna give credit where credit's due. The administration that's there now and the ones previous, they've put together a pretty good business package for Indiana, a place to do business, right? But the only trouble with that is okay, how come we're not attracting these corps? How come they haven't already said Indiana's a place we want to be? Well, here's why. Because unfortunately, along with the business package they put together, they forgot about the quality of life. So we've got to figure out how do we improve the quality of life in Indiana, because it was ranked one of the lowest in the nation. And when folks are hiring individuals now and the new generation of workers, they look at the quality of life before they even look at pay sometimes. And I've been told that, and I thought that's odd, but that's the reality of it, right? So what we're also going to do is we're going to create an opportunity where those companies will come here. Right now, unfortunately, one of our biggest exports out of Indiana is our young adults. And we've got to stop that. We've got to create opportunities so people can stay on the farm or stay in their small communities. Hey, let's look at the reality of this. In the last census, the majority, overwhelming majority of rural counties in Indiana all lost population, right? So that means that the state of Indiana needs to figure out how do we prevent this from happening in the future. And the way we do that is we create opportunities, just like you said, Steve. We create opportunities and incentivize those types of businesses to come to Indiana and do business. And we put together programs that will allow them to stay, because if those businesses stay and those businesses are sustainable with those good jobs, that means Hoosiers will stay. And that means the population will be sustainable as well in our rural communities. And that's got to start with, we've got to start properly funding our small rural schools. I challenge folks that are listening to talk to their local school superintendent and ask them, or school board members, and ask them, hey, what's the funding like in your local school corporation? And I will tell you right now, I was there in that chair just a couple years ago, And with the process that's going on now in the education side of this with rural Indiana, that there's a real struggle there whether or not they're going to be able to keep their schools open. And I know Farm Bureau has a small rural school coalition that's absolutely wonderful, and the school corporations that are small meet. And we've got to do more of that. I mean, there's a serious crisis out there in small schools across the state of Indiana, and I don't think the folks that live in those areas realize this, because those administrators and those folks are doing such a good job trying to hold everything together. But we all know that at some point that baling twine breaks, right, and that duct tape falls apart. So we've got to figure out, how do we put together a program that makes these counties and communities sustainable with those kind of jobs that you talked about, Stephen? We can do that. We've just not done that in Indiana. We've got to turn around. We've got to start doing that.
What other quality of life types of things are you talking about? You mentioned off the top about rural broadband. I think that might be one. I mean, yes, there's the business aspect. Yeah, there's also, you got to be able to watch Netflix. I mean, I think there's some of that. Right. You go off to a college campus, you've got Wi-Fi everywhere. Right. You go back to a rural community, and it's nowhere. I think there's some of that. Right. But what other types of things are you talking about that contributes to that quality of life that the state of Indiana can help with in some of these rural communities?
Well, one of those real issues is healthcare. Because we've got now in a lot of our rural communities, these small county hospitals are going out of business. And we've got folks that they have to wind up driving 50, 60, 70 miles just to get primary health care. That is unacceptable in the state of Indiana to Terry Gooden and Jennifer McCormick. We can do better than that. Another one of those issues that we talked about is quality of life, is the simple fact that a lot of folks would like to move back to a small community, but they can't find a home to buy and live in, right? So we've got to figure out, how do we incentivize builders to build homes in these smaller communities? And then we've also got to figure out this as we move forward. We've talked about the crisis that's been caused with healthcare, education, home prices, but we've also got to figure out, how do we make life more enjoyable in those small rural areas? And what the McCormick-Gooden ticket wants to do is, we want to try to figure out, how do we expand the amount of surface water in our state? Can we build more reservoirs? Can we build more state parks? Can we build opportunities for people to be able to get out and exercise? So all that falls into that quality of life. And you know what? I'll say, I'm not a grandparent yet, but I'll say that a lot of grandparents will say, hey, one of the biggest issues of quality of life for me is that I'm able to have my grandkids around me, and I don't have to leave the farm or leave my small community and move where my children had to move to be able to get a good job. So all of that kind of ties in, and I think what's happened in the past, if you think about quality of life in the state of Indiana, and you think about this, just look at your hand, and you think about that, you know, I think what's happened is the approach that's been used in the last 20 years or so is you look at each finger, and they look at that finger, and they try to resolve the issue. Let's say that this finger, the pointer finger, is transportation. Well, they just look solely at that finger and try to figure out, how do we do a manicure on that finger to make it look better, right? They don't think about the other four fingers that go along with that to try to make that work. So you've got a hand, you've got the thumb must be education, because it's going to touch every finger. Yes, the only finger that can touch all the other fingers. So we got to figure out, hey, how do we make this work, and how do we pull this together to make the quality of life better in Indiana? And we have failed at that in the last decade. And it's pretty clear to see that. I mean, that's probably one of the most glaring issues of all, is the fact that our young kids are leaving, and the opportunity that goes with them is leaving as well.
I think I heard him, Terry, I think I heard you say something about water. Mm-hmm. I'll let Randy.
That's not an issue.
I'll let Randy kind of take this,
okay,
one. I know.
Just water.
Randy,
water
that's policy. That's where you were going next, right,
yes,
Randy?
Yes, it is. That's but what I will say, you know, you go back 3 years ago, and we were talking water quality all the time, but water quantity wasn't even on our radar screen. Right. Because of an economic development project, water all of a sudden moved to the front of the heap, I believe. And, you know, by all means, we support.
Somebody's taking my water, Randy.
Yeah, they are. And that's in.
I'm in West Lafayette. Somebody's taking my water now.
Right.
And that's, I guess that's our concern. We're blessed in Indiana. We have an abundance of water, but not all areas have abundance. And when you look at economic development, which I agree with your comment, we want our kids and our grandkids to be able to have jobs, so we need economic development. But tell me, in your administration, how you would look at this. How do we protect existing users already, protect agriculture? Because I think we all know food security is national security. But when we start moving water around, you can have winners and losers. Mm-hmm. So what would you do, or how do we assure those that have invested a lot of capital, whether it's, you know, irrigation center pivots, it might be livestock. You know, livestock won't last very long if they don't have water to for them to drink. Or I also think about the processing side of it. That's a big water user, but that's how, where our food comes from. So what, how would you deal with this when we start moving water around, and what assurances would you give the farmers across the state that when they flip the switch for their center pivot or for their livestock, that water's going to continue to come out?
Right. Well, you're right, Randy. And we have wells on our farm we use to water our livestock, and it's very important. Groundwater is very important. And you mentioned the project there in the ILEAP project, and they're going to be pumping or sending in some way, shape, or form hundreds of millions of gallons of water a day across the pipeline that has to be built. And that's just one of those issues when we talk about a big picture and knee-jerk reaction kind of stuff, is there was obviously not very much planning that went into that thought when they put that together. Now, I'm not trying to throw the dodgeball at anybody here, you know, but let's sit down and take a comprehensive look at, hey, where does these things make sense, right? So what we want to do is, as Jennifer said right from day one, that the first thing, or one of the first things that her administration is going to do, is we're going to sit down with all those involved in the water scenarios in Indiana, and we're going to do a comprehensive water study and try to figure out how do we put together a comprehensive water plan for the state of Indiana moving forward. And if you'll remember, probably 20 years ago or so, Randy, you might remember this, Steve, you may, we did a water study in Indiana, and they did not follow that plan. It's kind of got put up on a shelf, and the dust has settled on it, right? So we want to look at that, and we want to figure out, okay, what is going to be the best opportunity, and what is the best policies to move forward? I'm not going to sit here today as Terry Gooden and say, here's, by golly, here's what we're going to do with water, because without studying that and knowing, hey, where does this all fall out, I think that would probably be a bad idea.
No, I think we're going to need you to do that. I need to know I need to know who owns this water, because it's coming from Tippecanoe County,
right,
which is where I'm coming from.
Right.
I'm gonna need some answers today, Terry.
Well, I tell you what, we got the answer there, and I tell you, we're gonna have a comprehensive study, and daggone it, the folks in West Lafayette and Lafayette's gonna be at the table, and we're gonna help decide this. But if you look at Randy, as Randy said earlier, we're blessed with a lot of water, and we've got probably the two most prosperous aquifers, underground aquifers, in probably not just in America, probably in the whole world. That's with the Ohio aquifer and then the Wabash aquifer. And you're right, Eric, reach over here and grab your water bottle right now to take your water, right? But we're gonna move forward with that, because hey, water is very serious. And you know what? And I said this in the debate, but you know, in the past we fought over oil. There's been wars that's been fought over oil. There's been wars that's been fought over ground and territory. But I'm telling you right now that water is a sacred commodity. And at some point, if we don't get this figured out, there's going to be wars fought over water. And that's what we're seeing, you know, out west. War like we think a traditional war, but it's going to be one of those deals where there's people fighting over water, and we don't need that. We need to put together a program that's fair to everyone and as we move forward. So, the corn growers and the bean growers and the Farm Bureau, all those folks will be at the table along with farmers and also those city utility managers.
Yeah.
So following up on that, understanding what's happening underground is not easy, and as we move water around, and you know, we know there's utilities that pipe water around different places. I would contend that we need some monitoring wells to really understand what is going on, and I want to know if we're drawing the aquifer down and it's not recharging at the very beginning, not when it's at the bottom and we run dry. So would you be supportive of some type of monitoring system around the state so that we understand what is truly happening around to all our aquifers, and are they being recharged adequately, or are we actually using up a resource that's going to be gone in a few years?
Well, that's a good point, Randy, and Jennifer and I have talked about that, and we think that's a necessity. We don't even think it's a what if or should we. It's one of those deals that there's got to be. Because if you don't, you know, it's just like, why do we have a fuel gauge inside of our vehicle, right? You want to know how much fuel you've got. You want to make sure you don't run out, right? So we got to do the same thing with water. I mean, it sounds pretty simple, but it's the same philosophy and the same thought there. We need to know what's going on underground with that, and we've got to be able to monitor that, and we've got to be able to say, okay, listen, this is not working out real well. We've got a real issue here. Before, we ran out of gas on the interstate, right? We don't want to run out of water. But if the way things are going and nobody even knows what's going on underground, Randy, you're right. I mean, there's going to be a real catastrophe. And I know folks, oh, my God, this guy's doomsday. But no, this is the reality of it, man. This is reality, you know?
Go ahead,
one more
Randy.
quick follow-up. You know, part of it is the existing wells and the high-capacity wells, whether it's irrigation or manufacturing. I think, you know, you bring new industry in, it's not fair to them if all of a sudden there's a bigger well and it sucks theirs dry. Do you see a lay of the land where they would have protections for existing irrigation wells, existing manufacturing wells around the state that new ones can't come in? Right now, the way the law's written, it's basically whoever sucks it out the fastest gets it. And so would you want to change that, or do you see something that would level the playing field and give protections to existing users?
Right. So, Randy, I think what you've asked me is really, it really goes along with the monitoring part of that as well. I think we put together a policy and a plan as we move forward on how this is used and the manufacturing that is used. And to begin with, we don't locate a manufacturing spot that has to have a gazillion gallons of water a day in an area that don't have any, right? We'd start doing some better planning there, and we start looking at what that looks like. And I think we can resolve a lot of those issues by just using some common sense moving forward. And as we do that, yeah, I think there's got to be some protections there. And I think when we sit down and do this comprehensive plan, I mean, I would suppose, and I would say that's probably going to be a part of that plan. I can't say for sure, but that would, yes, definitely be on the table as we talk about.
Yeah, the conversations I've had with folks and the meetings I've been in, the first step is really getting a better understanding of what's available, you know, how much capacity and where is it. Just a better understanding of that before we can really move forward with a kind of a full plan on how to have a water strategy across Indiana. So really that first step is a better understanding of what's available.
Yeah, right, Steve, it is. And as I said, I use the gas tank scenario, but it's really, I mean, it's probably a great reflection on what we need to take a look at and how that works.
For me, I think that this particular conversation, it goes into a couple of different areas. Yeah, we've talked about the water, okay? So there's that issue with this LEAP project. There's also the way that the Indiana Economic Development Corporation operates under this administration, how it could operate under a new administration. And there's also how farmland plays into that. And I guess that's where I'd like to go next. And that is that, you know, right now the Indiana Economic Development Corporation, it kind of buys up farmland and uses it for development. And I guess, you know, I'll talk about how the IEDC does that and then just how everyone does that. As we saw the report come out earlier this year from ISDA and the legislature wanted that report, I mean, we're losing farmland at a pretty rapid pace. If you really get down to the nuts and bolts of the data, we're losing a lot of it. And I know that you know, it's a concern of some in the legislature. What's your stance on all of this farmland that's being lost, one from development and even just our own IEDC that's going in and doing this? One, are you concerned? And two, if you are, what should the plan be?
Right. So that's a very good point, Eric, and I am concerned. As a matter of fact, and Randy, you'll have to help me here, but the Land Resource Council, as that was established, it got disbanded. But I went on one of those tours there with the Farm Bureau, and we traveled around a few other states that talked about how do you preserve farm ground. And we have to do that. We've got to preserve farm ground. I'm a farmer, right? So we're going to figure out how do we do this. Now, listen, this is one of these, when I say this bigger picture thing, all right? What the farm ground, how this plays into the role of how do we revive smaller communities is we've got to do this. Hey, look, those smaller communities, they've already got the infrastructure there. They've got the electric. They've got the water. They got the sewer, the sidewalks, the roads. Why aren't we incentivizing growth in those smaller communities to let developers and let communities rebuild in some of those areas? And we don't have to go out farther out and take up farm ground, and we don't have to go extend all those very expensive services out that far. Let's take a look at what we can do to preserve that farm ground. Does that mean that we start reinvesting in our smaller rural communities? And I think that has to be a big part of that. And I think there really needs to be a very, very comprehensive look at that and say, hey, wait a minute, we can do better than this in Indiana. It doesn't just have to be the old traditional, I want to build 10 new houses. Okay, so I'm going to go out and buy 20 acres of ground and build a new subdivision. Let's look at how we can use some of our current resources and our current infrastructure to make we still have the growth, but we don't lose the farm ground.
Do you have something you want to follow up with there,
just
Randy?
Just land ownership. And you know, last year in the legislature was hotly debated about foreign ownership. So I just, your views on foreign ownership of farmland, and more predominantly the bill was about adversaries. It's not as broad as foreign ownership, but more some of our adversaries owning farmland. And, you know, there were some projects that were going to lead to some of those adversaries having companies here. So your thoughts on that, or where you would go, or how would you deal with that?
Yeah, I probably fall in line with pretty much every farmer out there. Is I don't think we should be selling Indiana farm ground to adversarial foes, worldwide adversarial foes. I just don't think that's a very good idea. I mean, at the end of the day, we talk about fuel that powers our machinery, but you know what, the fuel that powers human beings, right? And that's food. And if we let our adversaries take control of the fuel that powers individuals, then I think we're really marching down the wrong road. So that's something that, as we talk about, Randy, that's something I've been pretty adamant about, this fact that if you're an adversary of the United States of America, guess what? There's going to be some limits on what you can do here.
Steve, other questions that you have here at this point?
Sure. Just another economic development type question. We see a lot of opportunity. May not be large volumes, but high value exports of specialty corn and soybeans via container. The container facilities that our farmers use currently are located either up by Chicago or in Cincinnati. We see an opportunity to get a better understanding of how containers flow through the state. We've got a lot of containers coming in full of products being unloaded at a lot of the warehouses that you see around our interstates, but those containers are leaving empty. How can we get a hold of that flow of containers so we can put specialty corn and soybeans on? And there's got to be other sectors that would benefit, other industries that are positioned well to export via container. How can we build Indiana as a container hub?
Well, I think the only way you can do that is you just have to do that. You have to build Indiana as a container hub. And it was when I was with the United States Department of Agriculture and Rural Development, one of our biggest focuses is how can we utilize our ports better? Because we've got a deep well port, which means that a ship can leave Mount Vernon, Indiana, Jeffersonville, Indiana. It can leave the Great Lakes area, the region up north, and go anywhere in the world without making a stop. So we've got those opportunities. We've got that transportation and that infrastructure in place. We just need to start utilizing it, right? So we have to do that. And when we talk about that, how do we partner with our neighbors, Illinois? How do we partner with Ohio and Kentucky to make this not just a one state container port, but how do we do this as a regional, nationwide regional port as well? And we're losing not millions with an M, we're losing billions of dollars with a B, and some folks may even say with a T, trillions of dollars by not utilizing our ports. And I think we can make better use of our ports, and we've got to do that.
I think at the policy summit that I emceed for you guys, someone said our largest export is air. That's no good.
Containers, yeah. Containers full of air is what we export.
Yeah. That's no good.
It's not good. We can do better than that. And that's one of the issues we looked at with rural development. And that's one of those issues we talked about IEDC. We've got to make IEDC more transparent. We've got to figure out how do we let folks know what's going on here and how do we try to make sure they stay in the guardrails, right? And I know there's some things that you can't just blurt out and some stuff's got to be done confidentially, but at the end of the day, there needs to be folks at the table when these decisions are made that they've got to be able to have a say in how it's going to impact them. And with those ports and that, hey, the IEDC should be more involved in our ports, and they're not. I mean, they are somewhat, but they need to be more involved. And we're missing out on, I can't even say, and I know Steve and Randy, and you know what I'm saying here, but I don't know if the public realizes the opportunity that is missed there with those ports. It's unbelievable, the missed opportunity there, and we've got to do better to be able to capitalize on it.
We're running a little short on time here, guys. Randy, I know you've got a huge list there. Steve, you've got your laptop out. Get to your most important ones here, guys. Get to the ones that are going to matter here. Randy, go first.
I'll just comment. You know, part of being lieutenant governor in your portfolio is you're the Secretary of Agriculture. Indiana State Department of Ag, you know, you've got Indiana Growing, OCRA, Indiana Housing and Community Development. What would you change, or what's your vision of all those agencies that you'll oversee and direct?
Yeah, so that's a great question, and all those with tourism. And so what we'll do is we're going to sit down with the experts and see what needs to be changed. And I think if you just go in there with a hatchet and just start clearing out the woods without – when you cut down the good trees with the bad, I don't think that makes sense, right? So I think we've got to sit down and take a look at that and take a comprehensive view on how do we move forward to make Indiana stronger. And agriculture, of course, I have the agricultural background, so the folks on the other side can't necessarily say that. So as we move forward, we've got to make sure that Indiana, as I said at the start of the podcast, Eric, is the fact that Terry Gooden gets elected lieutenant governor, agriculture is going to get its voice back in Indiana. And it's going to be a very important part of what we do here in our state. And it's going to rise to the top. And as we talk about that, you know what? We talk about our ports. Agriculture and those ports, they go hand in hand. And that's one of the ways we lift up our agricultural processes is we figure out better ways to use our ports. And I'm telling you, the transportation side of this as well, we're the crossroads of America. And there's no reason why we're not the container capital of the world and the semi-capital of the world and high-speed transit capital of the world. You know, you crisscross Indiana all over, and we got to make sure that Indiana's just not a drive-through or a flyover state anymore. We got to get folks to be able to stop, because when they stop, they spend money, and when that's money spent, that's bonus dollars. That's money you get from out of state, right, and from folks that don't live here. So we got to make sure we move forward on that, Randy. And I'm anxious to jump in that seat and move forward, because I think there's a lot of things in Indiana that can do better. And I'm just going to ask this. If you live in a rural community, just look at your rural community. I'm asking folks to drive around their community, all right? If they get a chance, I know they're in the field right now picking corn and cutting beans, but just take a chance, drive around their community, and ask them, is their community better off now than it was 10 years ago? And I'll guarantee you the huge majority, most of those folks are going to say, no, it's not. Well, that's the failure of policy of the state of Indiana to be able to lift up and help those rural communities. And with Terry Gooden as lieutenant governor and Jennifer McCormick as governor, we're going to go into these communities and we're going to help lift them up. And we're not going to forget them. We're going to make sure that they move forward. Just like I said before, a rising tide lifts all ships. Right now, that tide's not reaching our rural areas, and those folks they witness it every day. You know, I mean, it's a sad situation, and we can do better in Indiana. We really can.
Have you had conversations with people about who might lead your Department of Agriculture?
We've not had those conversations. There's a lot of folks that come in mind. I'm sitting here with three guys at a table that would probably do a wonderful job at that position, right?
Well, so, Eric would have to take a pay cut.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, ooh, that's true. So, but we haven't had any of those conversations. But I tell you what, as we move forward, we're going to make sure that it's an individual that likes to travel, because that individual is going to get out and about. They're going to be traveling. They're going to be talking to folks, just like I've done in the campaign, just like I did as the director of rural development. It was kind of funny. I had one guy said, man, Gooden, you're just like a mushroom. You'll pop up anywhere in rural Indiana, right? I said, you're right. And I want to do that, because I want to know what's on people's minds. And it's pretty simple. As we talk about rural America, and I did travel, the recipe for success is pretty simple. And every Hoosier knows it. They'd say, hey, Terry, all I want is just the opportunity to get a good job so I can raise my family with dignity and my children can have a brighter future than what I had. Pretty simple recipe, and the state of Indiana's got to be a partner in that as we move forward, and they've not been in the last decade or so.
Steve, final one here for Terry Gooden.
I think just want to thank you for stepping in the ring and getting your nose bloodied and wish you luck. And it's always been a tradition in Indiana that the Republicans and Democrats may lob grenades at each other through a campaign. But if you're an Aggie, you kind of put it behind you and you got work to do. You just roll up your sleeves and do it. So always appreciate working with you in the past, and wish you luck with this endeavor.
All right. Thank you much.
Terry, final thoughts here as we wrap up the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast?
Yeah, first of all, I want to say thank you so much for having me, Eric, and want to say thanks to Randy and Steve for being here to sit through this excruciating policy talk, right? But it's very important, and a lot of folks don't like to talk about it, but it's so important because this is what happens today impacts our lives and, more importantly, probably the lives of our children, right? So I want to say this. I grew up on a farm. I'm going to bring that hard work that I learned on the farm. I'm going to take that to the office there in the State House, and I'm going to represent rural Indiana, and we're going to move Indiana forward. We're going to make Indiana a great place to live, work, and raise a family.
Terry Gooden, the Democrat candidate for Lieutenant Governor here in Indiana. I thank you for joining us, Terry. Appreciate this very much. Randy, Steve, thanks for joining us as well. We are looking to do this with your Republican counterpart as well. Still looking to try to get some things figured out with the schedule ahead of the November election. Just trying to bring everyone the different points of view here as we get set for election time. Get out and vote. If you don't vote, you don't get to complain. Is that how
it
goes?
That's what my grandmother always said. So I wanted to make sure I always went and voted for sure. And my counterpart on the Republican on that, if he would be willing, I'd love to be able to sit down with him in front of you, Eric, and we have a conversation that way on your podcast. If he'd be willing to do that, I'm open to that and make that invitation.
Thank you very much, Terry. Appreciate that very much. The Indiana Ag Policy Podcast is brought to you by the Indiana Corn Growers Association, the Indiana Soybean Alliance, and Indiana Farm Bureau.